Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is once again Professor Hillary Clinton as a professor of practice at Columbia University's newly launched Institute of Global Politics. She's teaching alongside the dean, who said their focus is inspiring future foreign policy leaders and thinkers to collaborate around solving the world's most pressing problems.
What we want to see is a next generation of leaders that they know, they understand how to lead in a polarized society, because they will feel that they got the skills here to learn to disagree with one another respectfully, to persuade, to build consensus, to hear different views, to really listen, to question their own assumptions. That's what leadership will look like in the future.
I spoke with Secretary Clinton in an exclusive interview this morning about her new role that bridges the worlds of academia and public service.
Well, Secretary Clinton, thank you so much for making time for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. Good to talk to you.
It was the 1970s when you were last a professor at the University of Arkansas Law School. What's it like to be back in the classroom, and what was the intention behind taking on this new role?
First of all, it's incredibly exciting, and I was offered this opportunity to be a professor here at Columbia University, and I was very intrigued because, you know, having been in the Senate, having been Secretary of State, having literally traveled millions of miles, I wanted to know what was on young people's minds and what they were thinking about the world. I also wanted to find out if there were more effective ways in talking about the challenges that we confront, whether it's the war in Ukraine or climate change, whatever it might be. And I thought there couldn't be a better way than to stand up in front of 375 young people every week with my co-teacher, the dean of the school, Karen Yarhimilo, to, you know, really figure out what kids are thinking, what young people worry about. It helps me understand sort of how young people are thinking about these issues. Because I'll tell you, Jeff, before I started teaching, you know, I kept hearing, like, you know, they didn't want to talk about difficult subjects. They wanted trigger warnings. You know, I haven't seen any of that. This has been a very thoughtful and, for me, enriching experience.
Your course is focused on foreign policy decision making. And when you were Secretary of State, you focused a lot on Asia and the growing threat that China presented. Now we see the Biden administration trying to contain China, trying to develop more relationships, stronger relationships in the Indo-Pacific. He's calling for greater stability in the region. What's your assessment of the threat that China poses as it amasses more military and scientific and technological strength?
Well, I think it poses potentially a very great threat. First and foremost, in its region, starting with Taiwan, but not ending there. Clearly, China has demonstrated an aggressive approach, and they have, as you said, invested a lot of money in a blue water navy, creating, you know, much more capacity. What we're hoping is that we can manage the relationship. So yes, we have competition. We will have competition and strategic competition. And we should. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But we will not tip over by intention or accident into conflict. Much of that depends upon the current Chinese leadership. And once a leader decides to stay for life, you know, that's not a good sign.
As we talk about America's role in the world, the continued funding and assistance for Ukraine is now a point of contention on Capitol Hill. How do you think Vladimir Putin is eyeing the growing political divide over the Ukraine issue in this country?
I think Putin is not only thrilled by the divide over whether we continue and at what levels to fund Ukraine, I think he is fomenting it as well. Putin and his team that does the kind of interventions, covert and overt, aiming to undermine democracy and to suborn political leaders, is a big part of how he sees his role. So when I see people parroting Russian talking points that first showed up on Russia Today or first showed up in a speech from a Russian official, you know, that's a big point scored for Putin. When I see Americans in positions of responsibility talking about how, you know, we shouldn't support the people of Ukraine, you know, they're corrupt. I think, yeah, They are working very hard to be transparent and accountable. And talk about corruption, you know, there is the master of corruption living in the Kremlin. So there's an ideological and sadly partisan political divide. And I know that the majority of Congress is still in favor of supporting Ukraine. So we've got to get through this period. We have to pass legislation and continue to support. And, you know, Jeff, this fight is our fight. Honestly, I don't understand any American siding with Putin, but we've seen it and we've heard it and we have to fight against it.
As we talk about Congress, there's this effort now led by Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz to mm-hmm. oust House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Does Congressman McCarthy, Speaker McCarthy, does he deserve to keep his job as Speaker, and should Democrats help bail him out?
Well, I'm going to let Hakeem Jeffries and his caucus decide that, but I was pleasantly surprised that the Speaker did the right thing when he made common cause with those, as we like to say, grown-up members of his own Republican caucus and Democrats to keep the government open. I would hope that that kind of mature leadership isn't punished by the most extreme members of his caucus. So how the Democrats play this, and they have a couple of different options, is for, you know, for them to decide. But I think McCarthy did the right thing for the country. And isn't that a good thing to be able to say? He did the right thing for the country.
On this matter of extremists within the GOP, President Biden has said that the Trump Republicans, the MAGA Republicans, as he puts it, are semi-fascists, mm-hmm. and that there's this growing authoritarian strain in the Republican Party. Do you see it that way? And what's the best way to remedy that, if you do see it that way?
I do see it that way, and I'm not, you know, I'm not happy about saying that. And I know President Biden wasn't happy because it sounds so discordant to, you know, our ears. How could we be growing a kind of authoritarian political force inside our country? The people who are at the leadership level of all of that, both elected and unelected, are promoting lies and being incredibly divisive and, frankly, being loyal to a wannabe dictator. And how did we get here? I don't know all the answers. Lots of people are writing books about that. But I do know you have to do several things. You have to defeat those people at the polls. And there is nothing more important than sending a resounding message. Let's get back to regular politics. You and I can agree or disagree as Democrats and Republicans from different regions of our country, different kinds of points of view. But let's get back to having a fact-based political discussion where, you know, okay, what do you think about climate change and how we're going to deal with it? Or what do you think about our economy and how we're going to grow it? Let's have that kind of discussion. But let's move away from, you know, the lies and the personal attacks and the kind of nonsense moves like impeaching Joe Biden for nothing, simply because you disagree with him politically. You know, I was in the Senate, as you know, for 8 years. If you have ideas, speaking to the House extremists, if you have ideas about how we should govern our country, do the work you were elected to do. Have committee meetings, mark up legislation, take votes, then work to try to reconcile whatever the Senate comes up with. That's what used to happen, the so-called regular order. So go to work. You know, don't be, you know, walking around, you know, engaging in, you know, Twitter fights and insults and personal attacks. That's, you know, that is not the way we're supposed to govern ourselves. It's no way for a great country to behave.
When you say part of the solution lies in defeating those people at the polls, is the Biden-Harris ticket the best ticket to do that?
You know, people ask me all the time, and they particularly ask me, well, do you think his age is a legitimate issue? Of course it's a legitimate issue, but the outcome of the question to me is, okay, that's a factor, and let's look at everything else. Maybe people don't want to rebuild our infrastructure and deal with all of our, you know, physical decay, but I do, and Joe Biden does. Maybe we don't want to compete with China on building chips factories, advanced manufacturing in this country, but I do. Maybe we don't want to move toward a clean energy future as quickly as I think we need to. I like that. He got that done. By any measure, the accomplishments of the Biden-Harris administration are eye-popping. And they are laying the groundwork for a richer, more secure country with more people having an opportunity to go as far as their hard work and talent will take them. And I'm for them on the merits, but I'm also for them because the alternative is so dark and dystopian. To undermine the rule of law, to destroy our institutions, to pull us out of NATO doing Putin's bidding, to be unwilling to stand up for the real American values, to put one person above the country. None of that is American. So I think that Biden-Harris deserves to be reelected, and I think we have to reelect them given what the alternative is.
What's your assessment of the Republican field? Nikki Haley said that you inspired her to get into politics and run for office. And then there's this question of Donald Trump, 4 indictments, and yet he's 40 points ahead of his nearest rival. What do you think accounts for that?
It's, you know, psychological and emotional. A big part of the Republican base feels a connection to Trump. I still believe, sitting here today, he will be their nominee, no matter how hard others may try to distinguish themselves. And I think it's a very sad commentary on what people are looking for in a leader, because everything that he allegedly stands for is at odds with so much of what has made this country work for a long time, overcome many of our shortcomings and obstacles. And it seems almost impossible to break through that 40% that is wedded to him as the next president. So I think we have to do a better job in reaching out to everybody else who is potentially reachable. You know, talking about, you know, what kind of life they want for themselves, their children and their grandchildren, and who's more likely to deliver it. You know, there's all of these projects being announced all over the country. Donald Trump talked about infrastructure endlessly, never did a thing about it. Joe Biden didn't talk as much, but got it done. So if you want a good job, if you want a big potential opportunity to grow the area you're living in, particularly rural areas, because a lot of these projects are going into areas that have, you know, real needs, Joe Biden has delivered for you. But it's the emotional, psychological, cultural connection to someone who really has unfortunately manipulated social media and also some so-called mainstream media in a way that people believe what he says to them. And that's hard to break. It's like being in a cult almost. And so I know the Republicans running against him are trying very hard. I don't think they're going to be successful given where we are. So then I think it's imperative on the country to once again defeat Trump and elect Biden.
Final question, because I know your time is short. In preparing to speak with you, I spoke to some of your supporters, even some people who worked on your campaign. And the question they asked me to ask you is she okay? And I think what they meant was, is she at peace? Does she feel fulfilled after the, I would imagine, the trauma?
Yeah, it was pretty traumatic.
2016?
Yeah, yeah.
So how are you doing?
Yeah, personally, I'm doing great. And I appreciate that question because I get asked it all the time. and I always say, you know, personally, I'm great. I'm worried about our country and the world. And it always reminds me of what my dear friend and the first woman Secretary of State used to say when she would speak about all the problems we have. And she, you know, she wrote a book called Fascism, which was a warning to the United States. I'm talking about Madeleine Albright. She fled the Nazis with her family. Then she fled the communists. She kind of knows what she's talking about. So she would give these, you know, very serious talks. And then somebody invariably would say, but Secretary Albright, are you an optimist? And here's what she would say. And here's what I now say. Yes, I'm an optimist who worries a lot.
Noted. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, thank you so much for your time. And congratulations on the launch of the Institute of Global Politics.
Thank you very much.